their trades that didn't go through because teams trying to get either as much or more for Desmond Bane than what Zach Kleiman got was able to pull from Orlando. So you're able to pull this haul, use it. You've already used some of it. Continue to do that because, again, it does because you've acquired this massive set of assets, you've put yourself in a real enviable position in terms of the front office. There's a real quick way here, hopefully, to get back. Now, a lot of it's going to ride on Zach Edey being healthy.
Yeah.
But if that happens, yeah, I feel like you can do it pretty quickly. And maybe even as soon as next year, you're back at least battling to try to get back into play-in status. We'll see.
Jason, we really appreciate your time, my man.
Y'all take care, brother.
Jason Smith of the J&J Show. Start your day with J&J from 9 a.m. till noon. Cobb, they did it again. We got another Georgia player arrested.
It's only a matter of time. What took so long?
It's been at least several weeks. So let's talk about that and more from the world of college football. We also have the PGA Championship going on. Got to talk about a couple of things from that as well. We'll do all that during hour number three. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb. Georgia safety Jamarlee Riddle was arrested on May 8th, according to WGIG 98.7 FM, on May 8th on a pair of felony charges for possession of a controlled substance and a misdemeanor speeding charge, according to a police report. Riddle, who transferred to Georgia after playing his first two seasons at East Carolina, was arrested, according to the police report. The felony charges are for purchase, possession, manufacture, distribution, or sale of marijuana, and a sale of a Schedule 1 or 2 controlled substance. He did post bond for all three charges. According to a University of Georgia spokesman, we are aware of the charges and are actively gathering information. As this is an ongoing legal matter, we will not be providing further comment at this time. According to the police report, Riddle was traveling at a high rate of speed on I-95 when a detective in an undercover car observed a red Dodge Durango. Didn't think I was going to see Durango. Thought I was going to be Charger.
Those are old school.
Yeah.
Do they even make the Durango anymore?
I think so.
I think they do. Yeah, I feel like the Durango is just not a popular vehicle anymore.
Dodge spun Ram off and made it its own brand.
They don't just make the Durango still. They also make them in an SRT.
Oh, there we go.
You can drop a Hellcat motor in a Durango now.
So that explains why he was driving 95 miles an hour.
We just know he was traveling at a high rate of speed on I-95.
No. The detective said his patrol car was traveling about 95 miles per hour, and the Durango was still gaining distance.
He was weaving in and out of traffic.
He was going 100 in the Durango.
Yeah, it's still gaining distance on him.
100 easy then.
Officer,
easy.
I've always wondered this. Like, how much of it is on Kirby? Because I think we can safely say it's not zero. I guess you could also make the argument, like, are the Athens Police Department, are they just not damn good dogs?
Right? Like, some places you call the coach and you say, hey, coach.
I mean, have we done the math of since the number of arrests have gone through the roof, they haven't won a title. Is this maybe not everybody pulling their weight in Athens?
Georgia isn't the only place that has players who get pulled over for speeding. But you remember at Tennessee, there was this protocol in place for a long time where Knoxville police would make a courtesy call to the coach before the booking, before the mugshot, right? There would be a little courtesy call to the head
pretty
coach.
Pretty sure it happens in Tuscaloosa too, or did once upon a time.
And maybe some of this stuff doesn't get out. But you also invite yourself to get what's it called, when the federal government comes to intervene? Like, you don't mess around with stuff like that too long. And
once
it gets out there,
it is textbook corruption.
Exactly. Okay, here's my deal. Not only was he going a hundo plus on I-95 in his Dodge Durango, weaving in and out of traffic. Also, he's facing felony charges for distribution and sale of marijuana. Now, look, 15 years ago,
and a large amount of multicolored packaging.
Well, so you, which apparently were vapes. Well, my thing is, you can buy one of these THC vapes at any gas station in America now. So, one, why do you got to have that? And then two, all right, 15 years ago, if you're pushing dope as a college athlete, all right, man, like, you're just trying to make a living, okay? You're not getting paid. Maybe you're getting a little bit under the table. More understandable. Now, in this era, I don't care if this dude's a backup defensive back for Georgia. Even backup defensive backs are clearing 350 easy, probably closer to 500. So, like, why do you have to sell dope? Like, you're making $500,000 at Georgia.
Maybe it was a chit. Maybe it was like a private equity investment, Cobb. You got an injunction of capital. Now you can grow the business.
I guess. I mean, maybe he's an entrepreneur, but like, same thing with Aiden Holloway. Dude, Aiden Holloway is like a $1.5 million player at Auburn. You don't need to sell dope. 15 years ago, I understand it. You're just, and now it's like the other thing, like, I'm out of my realm here, but it's like, is the market for marijuana what it used to be? Because it's, you can go to a liquor store and buy a THC beverage. Like, why do you need a dealer anymore? It's the same thing with like bookies now. You can pull up your phone, download a betting app, and bet a gazillion dollars in 10 seconds, right? Like, why do you need to call up your bookie anymore? So, like,
well, I'll be honest with you, calling a bookie at least makes more sense to me than, to your point, like, Georgia's not a recreational state, but I do think it's legal. Like, if you have a card. But on top of that, to your point, like, it seems to me like the Delta 9, Delta 8, like, the synthetic stuff seems to be just as effective. So I'm with you on that. At least with a bookie, like, you can bet on credit.
Wait, and usually less juice with the bookie, right?
You're usually paying, like, the numbers are all pretty, they're all pretty standard, right? You know what I mean? Like, but the key is you can bet on credit. Like, you don't have to, if you want to go and.
So you can go into debt to bet.
Oh,
with a bookie.
It's one of my huge, it's like the guy, like, the, you want to get a real gambling problem, get you a bookie.
Okay. So how does that work? Take me into that world a little bit. All right. So you bet with a bookie on credit. You know, in the movies, it's like, all right, if you haven't paid up within 6 weeks, they're going to come and chop one of your fingers off or something, you know, but like, what's that look like in real life?
It's usually just a lot of harassing text messages. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Like, how many people are still betting with mob bookies? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it looks a certain way in The Sopranos, but you just wonder, like, what's that look like? But yeah, man, it's like, dude, you're a Georgia football player with two seasons of eligibility remaining. You're going to make 350 this year. You stick around, rise up the depth chart, you'll make 800 next year. You're going to clear over a mil playing 2 years of college football. Chances are this dude would at least get a shot in a rookie minicamp in a year or two. So, like, I just don't understand it. Like you don't have to have this side hustle. Like, you got a really good main hustle, but I don't know.
I can't figure out. Like, to me, it's like, either they're, you know, the Athens police aren't playing ball, but like, or you're being targeted. Either way, that would make me a little bit apprehensive.
Yeah, I mean,
especially
what's the bigger problem?
Especially if I got merch in the car.
What's the bigger problem for Kirby then? Is the bigger problem that there's no discipline on his team, that guys keep getting arrested, or, you know, because of they're engaged in this behavior? Is the behavior the problem, or is the fact that the most powerful coach in college football doesn't have a handle on the local police?
Or do just great DBs want to drive fast?
Yeah. Well, I will say this was also Glenn County Sheriff. So this was down along the coast, it sounds like, down towards Brunswick. So, I mean, that's not Kirby's domain. Now, granted, and this guy hadn't played a snap for Georgia. So if it's a guy that the sheriff,
we're about to find out really how much he was worth.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, what were their plans for him?
There have been clearly, like, some guys he just kicks off the team.
Right. If I don't know where Jamar Lee Ridley was going to factor in. He was really productive at ECU. So, but I mean, they've always got DBs out their ears. So, I mean, I wouldn't imagine that he was going to be, you know, top of the depth chart.
Also over at The Athletic, they have predicted the first 3 weeks of TV. You ready?
Okay.
I did not realize week one is brutal.
Do we got some good stuff Thursday, Friday, right? Like, do we do this Thursday, Friday, Sunday, Monday thing like usual? Or
we are doing Thursday, Friday. Also, did you know that NC State and Virginia are playing in Brazil?
What?
No. This was news to me yesterday. Also, it is yet again NC State and Virginia playing in Brazil, and one more time, it will be a non-conference game.
Oh, good. That's not confusing at all.
Yeah, that didn't factor into anything last year. Not great Thursday. So we've got the – wait, is this right? Tigers UNLV is week zero?
Yep.
How did that come to be?
I want to say they actually added that late, like Huff added that to the schedule.
But how did they qualify? Because they don't play Hawaii. Is it if you play it? Isn't there like
some point? I don't know.
Cobb, isn't there like some asterisk C footnote? Like there's something about a service academy that can apply?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, because I mean, they're at Navy, and Navy has an extra bye because of the Army game. So because they get that extra week, you have to play them, you get to do an extra week somewhere. I think is that because like basically Army and Navy, they don't have week zero. They have week.
Right. 13 or whatever. 14.
Right. They have it. So to atone for their extra bye week, you get to play in week zero if you want to have one. I think that's what it is.
All right. So week zero, we will have Memphis at UNLV, San Jose State, USC, New Mexico State, Florida State, Jacksonville State at North Dakota State, Sacramento State at Eastern Michigan, North Carolina, TCU in Dublin, and then NC State, UVA in Rio de Janeiro. Then our best Thursday game of week one is Colorado at Georgia Tech. Friday, we open up ACC play with Miami at Stanford, 8 p.m. on ESPN. Then our Saturday slate is the TV times that we have are East Carolina at Bama, Baylor versus Auburn in Atlanta. Remember they moved that for NIL purposes. And then Clemson at LSU. Then on Sunday, we have two games on competing networks at the same time, which is very annoying. Wisconsin-Notre Dame at Lambeau. They're going to put that at 6:30 on NBC. Louisville-Ole Miss in Nashville, 6:30 on ABC. And then we will close with a traditional Monday night ACC game, SMU at Florida State. That will be 6:30. So over at The Athletic, they've predicted what the TV situation is going to look like. So we know ABC has East Carolina, Bama, Baylor, Auburn, Clemson, LSU. So Stuart Mandel's predicting Fox will start with big noon Saturday, Western Michigan at Michigan. They will then have Oregon State at Houston. There's then baseball at 7:30. I was unaware of this. Did you know the Crapple Cup is week one?
Oh, I actually kind of like it.
I that is actually fun for me. So Washington State at Washington.
But boy, Western Michigan at Michigan, qualifying that as big noon.
Yeah, that's tough. So right now, Stu is only predicting one college football game on CBS that weekend, Ball State at Ohio State.
Oh, let's go.
NBC on Saturday, Boise State at Oregon. Okay, that's marginally interesting.
Yeah.
The ESPN slate, Can I interest you in Boston College at Cincinnati to start things off?
No, thanks.
Is Tulane at Duke still a revenge game now that Mensa is gone?
We both got burned by Darius Invincible.
Yeah, does it go from a rivalry, like a slight game, to like a commiserating, like brothers in arms?
Jilted by the same lover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's like group therapy. Texas State, Texas as the nightcap. And then we have UCLA at Cal.
Okay.
As an after dark game. I'm assuming
that should be given the horrendous run of games we have, that UCLA Cal should be featured more prominently.
Is that the please don't sue us, Cal? Is that the make good of UCLA leaving for the Big Ten?
We'll see. I actually kind of like that quarterback battle too. Nico versus JKS.
FS1. Ooh, boy. Does NIU at Iowa tickle your fancy?
If you like the unders.
We've got then an IndyCar race. North Texas at Indiana. I presume North Texas is going to have like 100 new football players.
I would think so. Yeah.
I think Oklahoma State's going to have 85 guys, new guys.
Dude, think about how overhauled the American is. I mean, like your three premier programs, like your three premier non-conference, or your three premier non-service academy teams, Memphis, South Florida, Tulane, all with new coaches, and North Texas, which was one of your best teams last year. Same deal, new coach, like that.
Well, we were talking about this. So, you know, there's obviously some Tiger football fans that were upset about the Vegas odds. I don't know how I would handicap the American.
Well, it's like if the favorite is plus 350, there's really not a favorite.
Correct. 100%. So we pointed out it is the highest plus sign of any favorite is in the American.
It's anybody's game.
Correct. And also, like, seven teams have, like, a win total of 7.5. So it's like, they're basically saying, like, we don't know. Y'all go get it.
By the way, on Memphis playing week zero, I think it's all because UNLV plays at Hawaii. I don't think there's a service academy component to it.
Well,
for Memphis. I think it's just because UNLV gets to pick. Or I guess whoever they're playing has to agree. Like, they can't just unilaterally move the game to week zero. But if you're Memphis, I mean, I think it's a pretty good idea because...
Oh, I'd be fine. Get you an extra bye week. They're also... Memphis is going to have a ton of travel this year because they've also got a Boise trip. Also, a reminder, Dan Mullen with a quarterback that he doesn't trust to throw but does trust to run is special. He is going to run Jackson Arnold 250 times this year.
God bless. Talk about a redemption project. Whew.
I kind of think it'll be fun. Like, he's not going to, like, look at how he treated Nick Fitzgerald versus how Moorhead did.
Yeah.
Like, do I really want you stepping back and throwing, buddy?
Well, we saw the Jackson Arnold running the football experiment work for like a game.
The Baylor game.
Yeah. And, last year.
And literally Aranda refused to get out of like cover four. It was unbelievable to watch. So I think that is a very recent development because when I opened the story this morning, Mandel had Boise, Memphis on the CW as a prediction, and now it's like off. So he has Miami of Ohio opening at Pitt to start some CW football, and then the nightcap would be Wyoming at Colorado State. Does that get you going?
I wish I could lie and said it does, but it does not.
Is it still Tom Brenneman over there?
He's one of.
And that's a deep drive to left.
Yep. Where else does...
Home run by Castellanos.
I think TB might also be calling some CW hoops.
Really?
Yeah, I think
hoops are ending up on the CW?
They have like the ACC third tier.
Right.
Yeah, it's a problem on college basketball Saturdays. That's the channel I don't get, the CW. And you don't realize you need it until
North Carolina's playing. Yeah.
Wire.
Yeah.
And you're like, how do I find this?
Yeah. That, and I don't think the CW's app makes it like super convenient.
So Jeffrey, why is week one pretty much hot garbage this year? Like, this is not an appealing slate of games.
My theory is because everyone is turning over their roster, nobody wants to put a big game week one, and they want to have like a tune-up. And then the other aspect of what's going on is because the SEC moved to 9 games, a lot of people started canceling non-conference games because everyone had to get rid of one. And so I think you're just kind of in this like weird slate, because week two's not terrible. Like, week two's headlined obviously by Texas, Ohio State, but like, this is a pretty,
this is just such a whiff, man. This is the one time in the calendar when you're not competing against the NFL. And I guess that's why they put their two premier games, college football as an enterprise, on Sunday of week one. But to your point, why do Wisconsin versus Notre Dame and Louisville versus Ole Miss, which are easily two of the best 5 games in week one, why do they have to be up against each other? Why can't one of them be in the afternoon, one of them be in the evening, instead of these two networks going head-to-head, which, like, I guess you don't want to just sacrifice and give the other one the evening slot to themselves. Okay. But it's like what's the expression? You spite your face to whatever.
Cut your nose off to spite your face.
Right. It's like, man, well,
I think I nailed
you
that.
Could have better ratings if you just put one of your games in the afternoon. So
my gut says NBC probably has golf.
Yeah.
Look up when the tour championship is. My gut says that they have golf in the afternoon, so they've got to put it later. And then ABC probably has other programming. Isn't ABC trying to do WNBA?
Yeah, goodness. We can't mess with the WNBA schedule.
Serious question.
The tour championship will be August 26th.
So that's before.
Yeah, so there's not like a premier golf. I mean, the President's Cup's not until late September. So, yeah, this is just a big miss by college football to have a week one this watered down. Like, when you have the weekend to yourself in a way that you will not at any other point during the season, to trot out this measly, watered down, crappy slate of games where the only good ones overlap, it's just what are we doing? It's just another premier example of like lack of leadership. Like, week one's been good for the most part the last 7 or 8 years with premier matchups Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It's a 5-day marathon typically where each day there's at least one, usually more than one, pretty interesting matchup. And this is going to feel like a major letdown.
I was trying to think like Clemson LSU, it's kind of a Clemson problem, right? That should be a bigger game. But it doesn't, it's like already like a 10.5-point line.
Yeah.
Week two's a little better. So early window Fox, you'd have Oklahoma at Michigan. Also in that window, you'd have Oregon at Oklahoma State. I don't feel like Alabama ever plays a conference game this early, but Alabama goes to Kentucky.
Got to play 9.
That's a fair point. That's a good point. Penn State on the road at Temple, where they will have, what, 80% of the stands?
Right.
Confusing Jersey game, Wake Forest at Purdue.
Ooh, yeah.
Cal at Syracuse. Did you know Mississippi State goes to Minnesota this year?
That is top 5 most random matchup of all
time.
That
was news to me. Battle of Maroon, I guess. Afternoon window, Arizona State at Texas A&M. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Arkansas goes to Utah.
Got ooh, I think that could be really interesting. You want to talk about, hey, like, welcome to college football now. Granted, Kyle Whittingham is not at Utah anymore, but that culture that, you know, Morgan Scalley's been a part of that for a while now. All right, Ryan, like,
ain't going to altitude.
Not only are you playing 9 SEC games, which Arkansas has never done before, you're also going out to Utah week two. Like, have fun.
Farmageddon's week two. Iowa State, yeah. Iowa. That's in the afternoon window. Then our nightcap is Ohio State, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Wazoo, K-State. No, thank you. Texas Tech at Oregon State. Duke's return trip to Illinois. That could be fun.
That was a
because
pretty good game last year.
Well, and Burt got under
Manny
Diaz's. I almost said Mario's. Like, no, the other Miami catch. Got under Manny's skin. Pretty good. Tennessee at Georgia Tech. Why did I think that one got canceled?
Yeah, I don't know, but that actually could be a really good game. I mean, Georgia Tech's a good program now.
Is Tech going to do the thing where they play that at the bins to try to sell more tickets?
Let me check on that. But that's not the automatic dub that some Tennessee fans might think it is.
Well, especially when you're probably going to be rotating two freshmen at quarterback.
Well, I don't know if you saw this thing Trey Wallace said today, but it almost sounds like Faison Brandon's going to be the guy. I'm not sure kind of where his intel is coming from, but the smoke coming out of there anyway is that George McIntyre is kind of fighting from behind in that battle.
Again, I covered two games of George. I always felt like George looked the part more than played the part of a quarterback.
Yeah. I haven't seen enough of any. I mean, that's the thing. I'm doing this thing right now for next week.
Let me ask you this, though. Isn't the fan base way more excited about Faison?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's the number one.
That's what I'm saying. Like, okay. If you're picking between two freshmen, at least play the exciting one first.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. So the Georgia Tech-Tennessee game is actually at Bobby Dodd Stadium.
Good.
I like that
Good.
It's on campus. But getting back to your Tennessee point, it is a situation where, like, I'm going through and tiering every starting quarterback situation in college football. It's kind of one of these, like, big offseason stories that just kind of takes some legwork. And, like, the tier that I put Tennessee's quarterback situation into with George McIntyre and Faison Brandon is unknown commodities. Like, they're one of eight or nine who I would classify like that in the entire, like, P4. And
I think about the SEC. Think about it like this. Bama falls into that category, right?
Yep. Keelon Russell, right? Yeah.
Levitt is a somewhat proven commodity, but there's going to be a question of, like, jumping from the Big 12 to the SEC and also health.
I've got him as a redemption seeker because performance was down and then he got hurt. Now he's going to a new place. So, like, I put him as a redemption seeker. The other unknown commodity that I have from the SEC, Actually, I had Jared Curtis listed as boomer bust. Like, all right, this is a true freshman, highly touted, trying to follow in the shoes of Diego Pavia. Maybe he comes in and has a lot of success, or maybe he's awful and it turns out like a Jaden, not, oh gosh, who was the guy who stunk it? Was it Dante Moore stunk at UCLA, right? We've seen other examples.
Dante was okay. Malachi Nelson, is that who you're thinking of?
Yeah, right. Like, this could go wrong. Like, so I put Jared Curtis at Vanderbilt, boomer bust. Unknown commodities, though. I mean, you're also talking about KJ Jackson at Arkansas. You're also talking about Kamario Taylor at Mississippi State.
George and I both like him.
Oh no, I like him, but let's not pretend like we. And then Kenny Minchie at Kentucky, probably going to start for Will Stein.
Probably
transferred in from Notre Dame. So Austin Simmons, Missouri, same deal. Like, we saw a little bit of him. He's still a mystery, though. Aaron Filo at Florida. Yeah, like, the more you go through it.
It's like the league.
Yes, the SEC the only, has a like lot the, of questions.
Like, Trinidad is a proven commodity.
Yeah. So,
and Gunnar Stockton is a proven Gunnar Stockton.
We know
I
what
debated
it is.
On
yeah, we know what it is. Like,
to, I debated like on where to not. Put Gunnar Stockton. Is he a proven star or is he a steady hand?
Proven starter.
proven starter. Okay, so he's somewhere in between.
He has proven that he can start football games.
I think the kid's tough.
Oh, he's nails.
I think he keeps it moving, but I think if it's got to be on his right arm, I don't feel great.
Good old Georgia boy. Well, Tennessee sure would have liked if his right arm had been a little less effective.
Don't go cover zero.
Right.
Don't give him the easiest. Don't give him literally the easiest throw for him to make. Oh, I got a one-on-one to the outside, and I just got to throw it up? Yeah, don't do that.
What do you know? Tennessee's got a new defensive coordinator this year.
Imagine that. I wonder if those two things are related. Oh, by the way, with unproven corners and cornerback depth problems because of injury. Let's leave those guys on an island on a do-or-die play.
Not the finest moment there for Tim Banks, who... Yeah, Jim Knowles has got a lot of pressure on his shoulders at Tennessee this year because I have questions about how good this Tennessee offense is going to be with a freshman quarterback in what is not necessarily like a, they can be bad sort of year. Like,
no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right, let's update what is happening out in Philly. We got the PGA Championship, couple of good moments early to talk about. We'll do that next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, over at ESPN, the 108th PGA Championship is taking place at Aronimink outside of Philadelphia. And our leader is South African Aldrick Potgieter, who's at 3-under, Tennessee native or Tennessee resident, native of Germany, Steven Yeager, also at 3-under, Minwoo Lee at 3-under, Cobb. I don't know if this was fashion. Was Minwoo wearing like rain pants?
Oh, these baggy flare pants are like a thing now in golf. I don't like it.
Is he with the same company that J-Day's with?
Gotta be.
Because they're all Australian. I just assumed that they all have the same. But they look like legitimately parachute pants. He's also at 3-under, as is Ryo Hisatsune. He is at 3-under. Best-selling author Dan Brown, 2-under. Pepper Pal Sahith Theegala at 2-under. Max Grazerman got it to the house at 2-under, as did Xander Schauffele and Akshay Bhatia. We also have another Pepper Pal, Andrew Putnam, at 2-under. My first ever interview was Andrew Putnam. A Martin Keimer sighting. He's 2-under through 9, as is Justin Thomas, Alex Smalley, and Garrett Higo is at 1-under.
He would be 3-under.
He would be 3-under, except for the fact that he missed his tee time. George, do we have it pulled up? This is the exchange post-round. Here's his explanation.
So just to be 100% clear, when you walked to the tee, it was a surprise to you when they said two-stroke penalty, you're late?
No. It wasn't a surprise. I was late. I mean, my caddy was yelling at me to get to the tee, so...
Oh, okay. So by the time you got there, you already knew that it was...
I knew it was probably going to happen, yeah.
Yeah. You were with the PGA, it seemed like, for a bit just now. Were you trying to argue your case a little bit, or...?
I was just trying to get evidence. I mean, I feel like if any of you would have done the same, because it's kind of... I was there on time, but the rule is if you're 1 second late, you're late. So if you think about it, I was there on time, if you know what I mean. But
I don't quite know. No, what is that? When you say that you were there on time but late, what's
like I was there at 7:18:30.
All right. So, number one, I mean, this is the radio program of don't tell these story, tell your story. I was on time, but I was like late. Is an all timer. Also, anyone that played high school football knows, Cobb, if you're on time, you're late.
That's right.
I mean, number one, that was just amazing. The fact that he still broke par.
Unbelievable. Also, if Garrett Higo does not have like blonde tips and like a man bun, do we think they still apply this penalty? Let's say Adam Scott rolls up to the tee 30 seconds.
Adam Scott would never be unprofessional.
I know, but also like, the excuse has to be, sorry, man, like, nature was calling. I had no choice. The excuse can't just be, I just forgot what time it was, basically.
So, he didn't get into it. I think the confusion was he was on the putting green, and the putting green is like above the first tee. And there are some places that if you're at the putting green and your caddy's bag is there, you count. But like, clearly, the fact that his caddy knew was a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, you're supposed to be at the tee for a major. Also, you're Garrett Kiggo. This is probably his third major appearance ever.
Well, didn't he won a tournament? He won that. Remember when we started playing in South Carolina at Congaree?
Yeah.
They moved a tournament there. He won that. So he's probably played in a few, but like.
In the last 4 years, this is his second major.
I was going to say he hadn't played in forever, I bet.
Yeah.
Also, a couple other great notes that I had from today. Did you see there's some bros that built a platform on their backyard overlooking a hole? So they're just like hanging out.
Like they're really unbelievable.
Like that's good stuff. You love that. We also had, I have bad news, Cobb. It's looking like this weekend there's going to be a block party. A Michael Block party.
He birdied one.
He's 1-under through 12. Was there ever a human being who got rid of like goodwill faster than he did?
It's been remarkable to see. I was into it at the time.
It was fun when you thought it was just like, it was fun until he talked. The idea
Michael
of
Block
Michael
loves him some Michael Block.
I would say nobody loves the Michael Block story more than the Michael Block. that was a big problem. Also, John Rahm opened with a 169 despite not making a putt more than 6 feet.
Yeah, he eagled.
He did have a hole out from 98 yards.
100 yards, yeah.
All right, you ready for Brooksy today?
Oh, yeah. This was not pretty.
Every round just seems to be the worst I can shoot. Putter is absolutely horrendous. Ball striking is absolutely phenomenal. That's been the story of the year. Brooks was telling zero lies. Currently ranked in strokes gained ball striking, first. Currently ranked in strokes gained putting, 127th.
Ooh. Man, he was missing some bunnies out there today. But still, only two off the lead. There was all this bluster about how this course was just going to get abused and the winning score was going to be minus 18. And here we are at 245, and the leaders are at minus 3. Unless this afternoon wave does something pretty crazy on a firming up course, it's actually holding up pretty well.
So the other interesting note, this was from Justin Ray. The average distance and proximity to the hole from the fairway versus the rough this season on the PGA Tour has been 8 feet 11 inches. So far at Aronimink, the number's 14 feet 7 inches. So there's a legitimate punishment for missing the fairway. I did see Rory on his first hole today, which was 10. His ball was about a foot off the fairway. And he basically, Cobb, like he was gripping the club basically at the end of the grip on the metal. And he maybe hit it like 100 feet.
Just gouged it out.
And it was just like, it was awesome. Rory defined his round as the S word. Did you get a look at Bryson? Did you see this coat that he was wearing? He looked like Jared Goff when he comes off on the sideline and it's like 40 degrees. They gave him like one of those.
I'll say this about Bryson. He only beat Sean McKeel by one shot today.
Also, so. Sean McKeel was in Garrett Kiggo's group.
That's great. So, I wonder if the order got messed up. I wonder if Higo was supposed to hit first, and then they're like, well, he's not here, and maybe McKeel just stood up there and ripped him a 260-yarder right down the middle.
Bryson's not careful. The only golf he's going to be playing is on YouTube. Because he'll get the U.S. Open for 10 years, but I think he's only exempt two more years for the other majors.
Well, I mean, honestly, though,
because the U.S., from an exemption standpoint, the worst one to win is the U.S. Open.
He's just a nonconformist. And I also think this. I watched the Ryder Cup season of the Full Swing on Netflix last night. And I just get this feeling of, I feel like the Americans would be better off without him. Like, I think golf, organized golf, I don't think would suffer all that much without Bryson. There's too many other good players out there for me to think that, like, his absence from majors and his absence from the tour will have some detrimental impact. Like,
I think we need people to root against. I think rooting against him is as fun as rooting for other guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess you give him that. He's the chief villain right now. I mean, Patrick Reed's working his way back. You know, he can be a villain.
He's kind of winning me over. Like, everyone else is being whiny about all this. Like, he's just shutting up and going playing, like, any tournament he can get in. Like, that's the thing that sucks about Patrick Reed. Everything about his golf game is interesting. But, God, he sucks.
Yeah.
But I do have the thought of having Lady J back on the scene does make me excited.
You really do have a soft spot in your heart for Patrick Reed and his wife.
They're just like, they're like reality stars. Like they do things that if it were like on a comedy, you were like, there's no way that's believable. It's awesome.
Yeah. We need a full swing season on the Reeds. I'd watch that.
Oh, I would pay-per-view it. Like I would buy a new subscription. If you gave me a really unfiltered look at the Reeds, I would definitely pay to watch it.
Yeah, I'm there with you. So who do you like this week? Who's your?
I'll tell you who I don't like right now.
Okay.
Aldrich Potketer is first in strokes gained putting. He gained 5 shots on the field today. That is not sustainable. Xander feels very sustainable at 2 under.
Well, I'd say Brooks does too, because his putting's been so bad. If he can keep striking the ball decently well, eventually he'll figure out the putter.
The other, of course, story. So Spieth got it to the house at 1 under. This is the last leg that he needs to complete the career Grand Slam. Are we going to get to Sunday with Spieth having a real chance?
He'll implode. There'll be a triple somewhere along the way.
It'd be fun to watch, but I'm with you. I do think if it's going to be a tough test, I do think Brooks is very much a threat.
I mean, this is his tournament. This is where he thrives.
This would be
the PGA Championship.
He would tie Tiger 4 PGAs.
Yeah.
And be back tied with Rory. All right. I will see you tomorrow. The people will hear from again next week. But Cobb and I got a golf trip this weekend.
Let's go. All right, brother. See you tomorrow.
All right. See you tomorrow. That is David Cobb of CBS Sports. Let's take a break. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George. For today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. Got to go with Candace Buckner over at The Athletic. If LeBron James truly wants to defeat Father Time, he should retire. The premise of the column would be, rather than watch Father Time and us see him
decline and more,
retire. I don't think you don't win that way. You just don't play the game. Like, in the end,
this is we have to take the LeBron factor into this, though. Like,
correct, but like my point is, he would not win.
No, no one wins. That's why it's a thing.
Right, but also not playing the game doesn't mean you win. You didn't play.
Right.
You just quit.
At least he quit after what, averaging like, what, 24 this year or something like that?
You know what another word for quitting is?
Retiring.
Retiring. My thanks to Jason Smith and to David Cobb for being with us today. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kinn Show's coming up next.